Yep, recording in progress. Okay, let's see. Let me do the introductions. I'm just going to go across the row. Drew. Linda R. Ruth Ann. Paul. Jill. Hi, Jill. Jim. Tyler, Jeff, Marv, Shoketsu, Nick, Jinryu, Karen, Joan, and Alice. I think I've got everybody. Yes, that's it. And tonight, we are going to hear from Tyler. So I will turn the meeting over to Tyler because I have no other announcements at this time. Does anybody else have any announcements? Okay, Tyler, all yours.
Awesome. So, hello. This is my very first ever attempt at even a Zoom meeting, which is kind of funny. So I'm very excited to see how this goes. I'm very, very new to Zen. I've only been really studying it since I started here about a year and a bit ago with you guys. But I thought they needed someone to help run something. I thought I should try that. So I'm going to give it a go. And I've kind of got a talk thrown together, but it might involve you who have other Zen experiences or more Zen experiences, sort of tying in what this means to you in relation to Zen, as I might not be able to pull those threads together quite as well. So it'll be sort of some thoughts, some questions, some things I'm talking about, and then what we all take away from it, I guess, as always, is just up to us. But I tried to send out the koan. I'm doing the koan on colic, entitled Colic. It's not really about colic, of course, but so I thought I'll read it because it's short, because apparently it didn't go out to everyone. If I'll just get started with that. So the seagull doesn't know when it's flying south in autumn. The fox stalking a squirrel in the snow doesn't even know it's hungry. If they don't know what they're doing, how can they do so much? Koan. The student approached the teacher urgently. My baby's had colic for 5 days. My baby once had colic for 10 days, the teacher said. I don't know what to do, moaned the student. I found out exactly what to do, said the teacher. Quick, said the student. The student begged, tell me what you did. I asked the master, the teacher replied. Who's the master? This is a reflection now. Isn't it interesting how often we want someone or something to be in charge and tell us what to do? How often we distrust the unfolding of our own life and place more confidence in other people's experiences. And if it's not a person we turn to for answers, it's something else. We toss the I Ching, buy the latest self-help book, and even return again and again to a set of principles or a body of knowledge we've used in the past. It worked until now. Sometimes we take refuge in our brain. I'll think about it. I'll analyze it. I'll figure it out. But as a Catholic contemplative, Richard Rohr once said, we don't think yourselves into a new way of living. We live ourselves into a new way of thinking. Being right here, moment by moment, with no preconceived notions from the past or expectations of the future, this is the most intimate way of being. It tells us what to do. But we want to get it right, right? All we have to do is find the right text, model, teaching, or YouTube video, and we'll know how to do life, or at least kids. Bearing witness, on the other hand, can be full of trial and error, of trying this and that, of meandering efforts, and that often don't give us the results we wished for, but something else entirely. Is there anything perfect about it? Of course, it makes a lot of sense to ask for advice and help when raising any child. Parents have done this from the beginning of time, but taking care of a baby with colic is a powerful practice in meeting the here and now with no resolution in sight. Most babies cry because they want something, food, drink, to be held, to go to sleep. A baby with colic cries for no apparent reason. Changing or feeding the baby won't help. The distress is obvious and intense, but there's usually very little anyone can do to stop the crying. Our mind naturally scurries back and forth, trying to find something to do. We call our friends, our mothers, our doctors. We read books. We pray. The baby keeps on crying. Not knowing does not mean I don't know what to do. Isn't the I still there? Listen to it, but I should know what to do. I'm not a good mother. I'm exhausted after 5 nights of no sleep. I hate myself. I wish this would end. Not knowing is about letting go of answers and resolutions and unconditionally opening to the moment. Right now, that means opening up to a wailing baby who maybe keep on wailing for a long time. Where there's nothing to do, what do you do? Throughout your life, haven't you found yourself in situations where you're at a loss, where your hardworking efforts don't show up in results? A good friend talked about raising a son with mental illness. She and her husband tried different kinds of schools and different doctors and therapists, read every book and article, talked to other parents and friends, did everything they could to think of, and often felt like they'd hit a wall, and nothing they did made much difference. Those were dark and clear times both, she said. We saw how life could unfold, regardless of her deepest wishes and fears, beyond her capacities and understanding an unfathomable life. It took many years, but finally, rather than feeling lost or bewildered, she found a measure of peace or even confidence. Can you remember to breathe as you hold the baby? Can you feel the warmth of the baby's clothes? Can you still smell the baby's sweet skin? Can you notice how anxious you are about your mothering? How you want certain moments to end or be different from what they are? How you want to fix things? Slowly, you let go of all that and bear simple witness to the baby's wail, your nervous fear and exhaustion, and also perhaps the deep stirrings of love and compassion that arise, even when, or especially when, you don't know what to do. What do you do when you feel powerless? How does it feel in your body? Can you hear the accusations and reproaches in your mind? Can you let go and bear witness? So as I said, the title of the koan is Colic. And so I'm going to start talking about dukkha and kids. And as some as you may know, because I feel like I probably mentioned too much, I run a preschool for 2 to 6 year olds. And I'm always impressed and honestly, sometimes a bit annoyed with their ability to be really, really embrace a moment. They can be incredibly mindful at times. And in one of my first meetings here, I was in a breakout group with Domio, and there was a question that we were answering. I can't remember what it was. And I made some sort of like altruistic comment about kids and their ability to be, you know, in the moment or something like that. And it was, I don't think it was a great example. And then Domio was kind of like, gave me this like side look. I'm like, maybe, but kids sure do carry a lot of dukkha. I was like, yeah, that's actually really true. Like reflecting on sort of what I was saying. And there can be a lot of stress and a lot of crying with children and babies and even without colic. And a lot of times when we're asking ourselves, like, what the heck is going on? What did I do? So I have this, this one morning I was walking around, kids are playing in the backyard. I was doing my count of the children. And there was one I couldn't find. It was little Lola, and Lola is, just turning 4. And she's the 3rd of this family of children that I've had the pleasure of having in my care. And looking around, and I see Lola curled up in a ball with her hands over her eyes, crying under one of our apple trees. And I walk over and I take a breath and I sit down. I said, Lola, you look sad. And she said, I am sad. I said, okay. I said, that's okay. She said something about kids taking toys and this and that. And I said, all right. I said, well, I can sit with you until you feel better. And she said, I'll only feel better if you get me a special treat. That was her response, is I will feel better when you go and get me a special treat. And so what over time working with kids, it's quite clear that with kids are expressing stress or dukkha, it says a lot about our own needs to be in control and to have all the answers and to be able to fix things for them. You know, parents leaving the school, dropping their kids off at a gate. There is a lot of times when the kids are upset, even when they've been coming here for years, they don't want their parent to go. They're at the gate and there's crying. And my thing is I will sit with them. And as long as they need to, you can feel free just to leave. But there's certain parents like Lola's that whom I love them, and this isn't criticizing them as parents, but they need to get to work. They need to get things. And they say, if you just stop crying, when you get home, we'll watch a show, right? We'll watch your favorite show when we get home. And there's, so we need to be in control. We need to be able to fix something. we have the urge to, we don't feel like we have the time, you know, to deal with their suffering and their dukkha in a good way. And being with someone who is suffering makes us feel uncomfortable. As a parent, even just as a friend, it can make us feel guilty. It can remind us of our own suffering and our own trauma. So we try to fix it. We try to get it out of sight. We bribe kids with candy or toys, or we distract them any way we can to try to get them to stop that expression of stress or that sadness. And so I have I'm really going to test you on this. I have a book I'm going to read you, a storybook that I read to children at my preschool. It's called The Rabbit Listened. And I'm just going to read, if you don't see the pictures, it's not a big deal, but please don't yell at me. I can't see the pictures. I deal with that all day. Just, you know, do your best here. So one day Taylor tried to build something new, something amazing. Sorry, something special, something amazing. Taylor was proud. But then, out of nowhere, things came crashing down. The chicken was the first to notice. Cluck, cluck, cluck. What a shame, what a shame. I'm so sorry this happened. Let's talk about it. Cluck, cluck, cluck. But Taylor didn't feel like talking, so the chicken left. And if you can't see the chicken looks a little pissed off. Next came the bear. Grr, rawr, how horrible. I bet you feel so angry. Let's shout about it. Grr, rawr. But Taylor didn't feel like shouting, so the bear left. The elephant knew just what to do. I can fix this. We just need to remember exactly the way things were. But Taylor didn't feel like remembering, so the elephant left. One by one they came. The hyena, hee hee, let's laugh about it. The ostrich, gulp, let's hide and pretend nothing happened. The kangaroo, tisk tisk, what a mess, what a mess. Let's throw it all away. And the snake, shh, let's go knock down someone else's. But Taylor didn't feel like doing anything with anybody. So eventually they all left and Taylor was alone. And in the quiet, Taylor didn't even notice the rabbit, but it moved in closer and closer until Taylor could feel its warm body. Together they sat in silence until Taylor said, "Please stay with me." The rabbit listened. The rabbit listened as Taylor talked. The rabbit listened as Taylor shouted. The rabbit listened as Taylor remembered and laughed. The rabbit listened to Taylor's plans to hide, to throw everything away, to ruin things for someone else. Through it all, the rabbit never left. And when the time was right, the rabbit listened to Taylor's plans to build again. "I can't wait," Taylor said. "It's going to be amazing." So we use that book regularly in our school as a way I try to help the kids with how we can deal with each other's stress and understanding in school, at our play school. So this sort of brings us to the idea of bearing witness. So this is a practice of witnessing or being with someone through suffering, but not giving in to the urge to try to fix everything or distract people from it, not robbing them of the opportunity to feel everything they're feeling and just be with their own stress and feelings. But this, of course, is a tall order. Bearing witness to other people is challenging, especially with kids. The colic is a pretty interesting example. I think we all, who's ever had to deal with any crying baby, but a colic is something that there's really no fixing it. You're dealing with colic a lot, so you're probably stressed. You've got your own extreme sleep deprivation, which is crazy making. And there's a reason that sleep deprivation is a torture technique, because it just does not, just messes with your brain. So it's a pretty interesting example for them to choose, because there really is nothing in that much that you can do about that except for be there for them. It's tall order bearing witness because no one wants to see kids suffer. We would think they like their lives to be blissful as possible. And I think that we are, humans can be like natural. I know I was, I guess I'll speak for myself. I used to be like a fixer. I like to fix problems. If someone was upset about something, I get this from my father, I guess. If something's upset, he's like, oh, well, here's the problem. Here's how we fix it. Now there is no longer a need for you to be upset. Problem solved. Emotions removed. Here we go. And we're off. And that used to be me. And I think over time, with a partner that did not appreciate having her problem solved by me over the years we've been together, I was able to kind of pull back and start learning about bearing witness. And then, And Domio has a whole podcast on bearing witness. She speaks about it a little bit on a larger scale. So how do we bear witness as a way of, but not burning out without, you know, she looks at large scale things like climate change. But how can bearing witness be followed up with an action? But we keep coming back to the question, which I think is here, is that is bearing witness in itself an action? Is it a good enough action when we're dealing with suffering? In the Bodhisattva vows, they talk about, you know, beings are numberless and I vow to free them. And I guess I'm like, how does bearing witness fit into that? So I guess I had some questions about, well, I guess even before I had some questions, just the, I don't know, Alice, you might not feel like talking, but you talked on Thursday about, going with one of your child crying and having to just go out and stare at the moon. And there was this really nice little story, and it was, I don't know if you feel it, you probably, but I don't remember how it came up with the Sandokai, but we were talking about, but you were, it reminded me of, I'd already sort of dealing with this topic, but it doesn't matter. But you know, you were saying, you know, at some point you realize you would just would walk outside and just stare up at the moon and then just be with your crying baby. And it gave you this realization while staring at, you know, at the moon about how little we are in comparison to this whole thing. And the suffering is just, you know, part of it. And we're here with it. And then I think how small, I think you said like, you know, how small and intimate it is and then compared to the rest of the galaxy. And then I think Mick was like, and like, but how big it also is to be in that. And I thought that was, you know, interesting, because I was just had been reading and been planning for this colic thing. But I had a few questions, I guess, as a way of moving forward. And I guess, what does bearing witness mean to you? I don't know if we want to do, I've got a few questions. I don't know if people like breakout groups or not. I was specifically asked to only do it once if I did it. But why don't we just do that, I guess, and I can, how do I pass the questions on, Bob? I think if I put it in the, well, I'll just say them and then you can probably remember them as best we can. I guess that's usually how we do it. So,
Tyler?
Yeah.
Yeah. What I can do is copy whatever you want out of the chat.
Okay.
And then I can go to each of the breakout rooms and, paste it into their chat box.
Sure. Okay. Oops. I meant to edit that a bit so it wasn't quite so jumbled together, but we should be able to figure it out. Yeah. And then, as I said, this is where folks can talk about like how they might string in some ideas of how it fits in with their Zen practice or not by looking at these questions. They're just some thoughts that I had reading through. Sometimes I feel like when I'm bearing witness, if I'm being honest, I feel like I really should be doing more than this, but is it enough? I guess is what some of these questions are asking. Four or five in a room, Bob, is that what you...
Yeah, I will have to shuffle some around because we've had some additions. Mm-hmm. And it looks like we got 6, 5, and 3 at this point. I might move some people into 3.
Yeah.
But are you ready for me to open rooms now?
Yep, let's go for it.
Okay, here we go.
And I don't know how many people we had, but that looks like probably everyone's back. Did anyone have anything they wanted to bring forward that they talked about? Either not necessarily answering all the questions or whatever, but necessarily anything interesting that you came through? Joan, yeah.
Yeah, the question about whether or not it was an active thing. Several people agreed that it definitely is, and it really involves compassion, having a lot of compassion, which is an active thing, not a passive thing. So it was something we talked about.
Yeah, we had a bit of a discussion on that, and some people actually were saying that it didn't feel like an action, but just felt like something you could not do. But yeah, it was interesting. Like, it definitely is, like, you know, you are, in a way, you're giving compassion by being there and listening. But there was a feeling, I think that I think Junior is gone now, but she was saying that it's just, yeah, I can't remember exactly how she put it now, but she was suggesting that she didn't think of it as an active thing. Maybe it's an action, but it's not you're not doing something to someone or at someone or anything like that. Yeah. Did anyone else have anything interesting that came up? Cool. We'll skip. I guess, sorry, I was just going to maybe share and show you guys a video about something else, but I think maybe I won't. But oh, well, actually, you know, I guess we'll why not? I guess one thing that I think is that it isn't in a sense, I was thinking it is in a sense an action of sorts when you sit down to bear witness to someone else's pain. Or actually, we talked a little bit about how you can bear witness to someone else, or I spoke up at the end about bearing witness to someone else's joy without necessarily making that joy yours, just letting them express happiness and then being like, great, that's wonderful, you're happy. But I won't get into that. But we kind of talked about how, I just want to talk about this thing. Has anyone ever heard of Interbrain? There's this thing that it's sort of like, my partner describes it in her classes as like a Bluetooth or Wi-Fi connection between our brains that actually, exists. A little bit that actually exists. And it's sort of like that thing, like if you've ever just walked into a room and you can tell that two people are very pissed off at one another without looking at anyone, but there's a feeling in the room that you can sense. And that sense, actually, you know, that sense is that feeling is actually a thing called interbrain. And I was gonna try to connect that a bit, but I think what I might do is I'm realizing I don't think I have the right video for that. So if there weren't anything else about the questions, I thought that we'd talk a little bit about bearing witness to others' suffering, but I think it's also an important thing about bearing witness to our own suffering. And so I thought I'd tell, you know, some folks are like, well, I don't have kids, but I deal with, you know, bearing witness between suffering with adults. But it also reminded me of the koan about, trying to fix problems that are potentially, or that are unfixable necessarily, or not necessarily unfixable, but trying to make problems we have and trying to fix them and concentrating on how to make myself a better person, or, you know, that sort of thing with the, and so I have, rheumatoid arthritis. And so a number of years ago, I was going through a few years where I was in pretty serious chronic pain. The pain was forcing me to give up things that I truly enjoyed in my life, rock climbing, bicycling, activities that, you know, just even just like playing on the ground, wrestling with my kids was becoming quite a painful ordeal. And so understandably, I think I started getting pretty down. I started feeling depressed. I was unhappy in my work. All these sorts of things were going on. And I tried a lot of different things. So the first thing I tried, I was a government worker at the time. So I tried counseling. And funnily enough, I went to this one counselor and it was just random pick through this work thing. And she was a problem solver. And by the end of our first meeting, she discovered my problem was I was unhappy in work. And she had almost signed me up to be an accountant at a year for a college course. And at the end, she's like, great. So you'll just sign up for this course. You can become an accountant and everything's going to be great. And I was like, what's going on? Like, how did we even get here? By the end of one 45-minute meeting, and she had my problem sort of solved. And I was out the door. And I was like, okay, that wasn't right. That's not solving my problem. And as a side note, oddly enough, one of my friends used the same program and must have ended up with her too. And she tried to get her to become a massage therapist. It was just something she did, I guess, at this. So that didn't work. But my next thought was, I stumbled upon this mindfulness counselor. So it was this sort of mindfulness mental health sort of thing that the work that the government office had. But she turned out to actually be a practicing Buddhist and a teacher over in Vancouver, but was supposed to be running this secular program of mindfulness. But we quickly kind of got to know each other, and I was already meditating a bit. And so she brought me towards something that was Zazen as a way to, you know, she quickly understood that I had this chronic pain, and as a way to just use meditation to start simply being with being with the chronic pain, being with the pain from the RA. And obviously I was not meditating my pain away. The physical pain from the RA was still there. But it became clear even early on about this sort of how I was taking ownership of this pain and thinking about this pain. And it was mine. This real I, me, and my making, of my own suffering and pain. And then, as I started to embrace this idea of just spending time, a bit of time every day, just being there and just acknowledging it was happening and not engaging with it, and how that changed my experience with my suffering. And I think that this talk, although it was about, you know, how to deal with suffering with a baby, but as I think Mick pointed out in our group fairly clearly, it's sort of like, why do we have this need to fix something that is completely, you know, why do we need to find this problem and then fix it? You know that there's no answer to solving colic. Not right now, my love. That was my youngest one. but yet we still are always searching out this way to fix all of our problems. I may not have been as eloquent as Mick was in that in our talk there, but this is sometimes, you know, it's actually really hard to let go of our own suffering. And I guess that's what, you know, a lot of what we talk about is trying to get out of this sort of cycle of suffering. And so I guess I was kind of curious, and this maybe this is obvious to everyone else, is Zazen just a bearing witness practice? Or is that putting too much purpose on Zazen? I'm just kind of curious. At the very end, I just started writing, like, how does this sort of connect with our, is that what we're, you know, because at Zazen, all these things are coming at us and we're just supposed to sit there and be with it or acknowledge it and let it go or whatever that is. And is that, you know, because everything we do seems to always just come back to sit down and do Zazen. Yeah, I don't know. I guess that's sort of where I had that question at the end. Is that because, anyone have any thoughts on that? Or anything else we've talked about or anything else in the koan, I guess, that interested you at all?
Yeah, I really like this idea of like bearing witness with the self. I think that Zazen is a lot of things, but I think one of it is probably bearing witness with the self. particularly with things like this. You know, I think, and this is a little bit what I said in our breakout room, I think to imagine that you have these problems that need to get fixed is to like buy into this world where there's a future you that like doesn't have these problems. And it's just not true. And the more that we convince ourselves that we have problems and that there is this perfect you, it's almost this like Indiana Jones thing where you're like, I can almost reach it. And you're just so tempted to just like really buy into it. And, you know, it is really seductive, this idea of this like perfect you, that if you just fix a couple of things, you can get there. But I think it, you know, fundamentally, that's you're missing it, because you're looking past the you that's already there. And to me, that's what, at least that's what my Zazen feels like, is I feel like I'm just here, you know, and I'm here and I'm in my living room and I'm sitting, and there's like, there's nothing more and there's nothing less, and there's no future me that I need to latch on to. I'm just me. And it's hard when you get off the cushion to keep feeling like that. But I don't know, to me, that's what Zazen is. It's this nice kind of gentle reminder of like, oh yeah, it's already all right here. I don't have to reach for it. It's not close, because that's not real out there.
I think this question is very interesting. And I am sure that there are many forms of Buddhism who would wear the idea of meditation as bearing witness makes sense. In fact, Bernie Glassman, he came up during the koan that I did, would take people on retreat to Auschwitz once a year in order specifically to bear witness to what happened there and to people's pain. But Zazen as bearing witness, I'm sure there are meditation tools where bearing witness to myself and my own suffering and whatever the problem is at hand would be very helpful. But in Zazen, I'm simply there. In fact, even though we're not supposed to have a goal, ultimately, mind and body are supposed to drop away. So I don't know how bearing witness works with that. But it's a great question.
Yeah, that's really, yeah, interesting. Because I mean, I think if that's your, yeah, as far as not supposed to be having goals, but if that's the idea that the mind and body drops away, how can we bear witness? But I guess I would say I'm not quite there where the body and mind are dropping away. So maybe in the meanwhile, things are coming up. I'm trying not to engage with them, but I guess bearing witness isn't a lack of engagement. It's just a different type of engagement. So yeah, I think it's obviously when people discuss what Zazen is or meditation is, I think there's a lot of different thoughts on what it's supposed to be. And I'm still, obviously every time we have one of these things, it seems to somehow come back to that and what it's supposed to be. And yet still, I feel like I'm not entirely sure what it is. So yeah. Did anyone else have any thoughts on that or on the reading?
I would say for me, that is Zazen. It's me bearing witness to what is going on in my life. I feel like I'm so much. They're so fast. Everything's so fast and going on that I never have time to just settle and let it settle. And how am I feeling? What is going on? And yeah, not to get enraptured or get moved by those feelings, but just to notice what's happening. And then just noticing, oh, wow, I'm thinking about that memory, you know, 20 years ago. Or, and then I think about something that's happening currently, and then just watching it. It feels like third person. Like I feel like I'm a narrator watching that story go on, but trying not to engage it. But that's, I don't know. That's for me. That has been always been Zazen, is just like, I can, I mean, maybe eventually I'll get to the point where I can be body and mind and everything will drop off. But it's like such a small little chance that that happens, but it's usually just me noticing what's happening. And then I always just like what Mick was saying, like, yeah, I wish I could bring it off the cushion. Like even today I was like, oh, I felt so calm. It felt like so great. And I know you're not supposed to qualify Zen, but it was like, man, that was a great meditate. I meditated in my backyard and it was just so fantastic. And I was like, God, I wish I could feel like this all day long. And then it was like, boom, done. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think bearing witness is Zazen. That's how I mean, I feel like there are moments when you can have it, catch it, when you can kind of just be at peace, but it's just filtering through all that stuff first before you can get to those little glimpses of peace. Maybe I'm just not there yet.
Linda, you have your hand up. Yes.
Okay, so I've been dealing with a really challenging situation for the last week. I have a friend, I've been her friend for about 7 years, and she's on disability for mental health challenges. And she's got other health problems. And this koan that we looked at tonight, it talks about, you know, going to other people for the answers to fix things. And she often wants me or other people to fix things, but I can't give her everything that she wants to fix things. Like my energy is limited because of my own, I have an autoimmune disease that causes fatigue. And so I need to focus on my self-care, but then she also wants monetary assistance, which I give in limited forms. And I said no to something that she wanted me to do last week. And then it was just silent treatment. And so that hasn't happened before. And so now I'm trying to decide what to do about the friendship, because it feels now really not good. So this just gave me another way of looking at the koan, is not me going to someone for advice, but someone coming to me because they want things fixed, and me knowing that I could fix a lot of the things, but that it's not the right thing for me to do for myself. And that's hard. So I've really been struggling with that. And that's all.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Yeah, I was, the other thing I was thinking, you know, for folks, that when I was reading this initially, I was like, you know, not everyone has kids, but we've all have, you know, other adults in our life that you have to bear witness. Or I was thinking about, nurses or even, I guess, doctors, you know, that are with people when they're, you know, in their dying moments or things like that. And just, you know, there's nothing you can do. There's nothing you can, you know, it's a bit of a heavy way to end here, but like just being with them in that moment, there's nothing you can say to make it better, but you can just sit with them and hold their hand or whatever, you know, whatever it is. And and breathe with them and lend them your calm or whatever it is that you're trying to do. You know, because it's not just our experience with, you know, screaming children. That this is, I think, comes down to. There are just things in life that we can't fix, and we need to let go of our need to fix them and just be okay with what it is. I guess if there's no one else that wants to add anything, we're
basically... I do want to add one little thing.
Yeah.
Because the koan is also about practicing without knowing. Mm-hmm. Practicing not knowing. And
right.
The woman who said, I went to the master, or whatever the wording was, but it did use the word master with a capital M. And to me, that did not mean going to another person. It meant going inside. Almost as if we really do know how to do this, but it's way deep down inside. And maybe Zazen is a way of finding it. But that was my take on it. I just thought I would add that.
Yeah, I really like that. When I first read it, the master, I was like, oh, he's talking about the crying baby. But that's just me as a parent, I guess. I know who's really in charge of my life.
I thought it was the baby. She was the master.
That's just a little bit.
I read it that way. And then I was like, oh, of course. The master knows everything because the master just wants to cry.
Maybe that's not as, yeah. Bob, are you up?
I'm up. My voice is not doing very well. I was wondering if Jinryu could do the dedication and the dedication of merit. Would you mind doing that, Jinryu?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tyler. It was a great discussion. We offer the merit of this discussion and study to all, so that they may be able to find the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita.
That was really great, Tyler. Thank you.
I really enjoyed it. It was very thought-provoking.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tyler.
It was a fun thing to try, so I appreciate everyone coming out.
Nice. How do you feel about it?
It happened. No, I feel good about it, if I'm being honest. Yeah, I feel good. I've got some ideas if I ever want to do it in the future of what I can kind of do. So yeah, it was lovely.
Great job, Tyler. Thanks, you.
Friends. Bye, Karen. Sure. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tyler.
Good dream.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.